This is the station that celebrates Caitlin's triumphant grand champion show goat for all weight classes at the Spring School District Future Farmers of America livestock show earlier today. I am now the proud grandfather of a blue ribbon goat. Stay tuned for PZ Myers.
I don't want to say too much about it. They might be listening right now. Meet me later in the parking lot. I got the yellow El Camino with the bumper sticker saying isolationism. Ask me how. It's a nation of freedom and tolerance, and that's just plain dangerous. Let's wipe out terrorism everywhere, except of course where the terrorists are us. Oh, let's go after the Buddhists. Let's go rough up some monks. Those semi-mystic, anti-dualistic, morally relativistic punks. Instead of contemplating their navels, they can contemplate our naval might. Hone your epithets, grab a torch, and let's go find somebody to enlighten. Hey, dude, you look like you'd have a patriotic attitude. Let's kick some boot. Oh.
Hi, this is Roy Zimmerman. Listen to Inner Side Radio because it doesn't suck.
Thank you, Roy. Joining us tonight on Texas Radio, broadcasting below the Bible Belt, is PZ Myers, professor of biology at University of Minnesota, outspoken atheist, and renowned author and proprietor of the Pharyngula blog, which we refer to on radio as the Google PZ, as in Paul Zachary, and click the top link. So in terms of internet traffic, PZ's blog is by far the most popular science blog in the world. And as I've mentioned before, Pharyngula is more than a science blog. It reflects a magical yet unholy trinity of science, atheism, and liberalism, which was apparently something a lot of people were looking for. So I need to interrupt my introduction because I need to ask a question, PZ. Are you there?
I'm here, sure.
You started the Pharyngula blog in 2002 as an online teaching tool, and
yep.
then it morphed into a personal blog. And I'm wondering, when did this take on a life of its own? Was it a gradual increase in traffic, or was it like a big, just cruised along and there was a big bang?
It was a very gradual thing. It just grew and grew, and it's still growing.
So it grew out of Panda's Thumb, which you were doing before that.
No, actually, Panda's Thumb came after that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Your wiki thing is wrong.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
you might want to go correct that.
But I don't get to correct those things.
Oh, okay.
But yes, Panda's Thumb came along a little later.
Okay.
They jumped on the bandwagon of all the success we were having in the old blogosphere, and they exploited it well.
So this was not a big bang that brought you from the singularity of a mild-mannered professorness at a Northwestern university.
Well, my personality hasn't changed, so I'm still the mild-mannered professor. It's just I've got this little trumpet that I can play on the Internet.
And, well, you've also moved from private citizen to public figure.
I guess.
And you've only been threatened to have been sued once, so, as I learned.
No, actually, there were a couple of times.
A couple of times?
Yeah. They never came to anything.
So, but the popularity of Pharyngula has certainly changed your life, right?
Oh, it means I travel more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that I guess it definitely has. My wife doesn't see me as much on weekends anymore.
Anyway, I should point out that the popularity of Pharyngula is more than just a series of coincidences and random mutations, because the amount of work that you put into the blog is astonishing, and more than just prolific, your writing is very articulate, entertaining, and always informative.
Thank you. Keep talking. It sounds great.
It's the foundation of its popularity. So, listeners, if you're an amateur science geek who likes to argue politics while plotting the demise of superstition, ignorance, and bigotry, well, hitch up your britches and scoot your boots on over to Pharyngula. And if you're feeling frisky, you can register and dive into the discussion It goes 24/7 all over the globe. But don't spout off on stuff you can't back up, because they're pretty sharp, and they'll hand your ass to you. Take my word for it. You'll think a giant octopus shoved a surfboard up your comma-speckled semicolon.
Yes, it's a very harsh crowd there. But, yeah, we welcome everyone. Jump in and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, atheists like to argue.
Oh, number one thing we like to do, yeah, it's our sport is...
That's a sport,
having
right.
arguments.
Right, because all of those absolutes keep changing.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, PZ, you've just returned from a global atheist convention in Australia.
Correct.
First question, were you able to get a feeling for Australian culture in regard to their general religiosity, separation of church and state, intrusion of religious superstition in the classrooms like some places I know?
Uh-huh. Well, not really, because you got to figure I was in a very biased atmosphere. This is a place where thousands of atheists descended on Melbourne and came to this conference, and so I was surrounded with my own people. And what I heard about the greater Australia was kind of secondhand.
Uh-huh.
But so I got a general impression from that, hey, Australians are a good, practical, agnostic to atheist bunch. With a few loonies on the side.
So they export the wing nuts here.
Yeah, we got Ken Ham from Australia and Ray Comfort from New Zealand. I guess they saw that America was a more fruitful soil in which to sow their nonsense. So they came here to get rich.
And I guess Mel Gibson, too, huh?
Oh, right.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Ken Ham is the curator and founder of a creation science museum in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, Roy Comfort is a co-host with Kirk Cameron of a fundamentalist Christian sort of abstinence-only way of the masturbation radio show.
Yes. Yeah. The abstinence only applies to intelligence, of course. They completely abstain from that.
Tell us about Australia. I noticed that there were a lot of... Well, first of all, you seem to have been representing for the Yanks.
There were a bunch of British people there. Yeah, those bigots. They mainly wanted people from the United Kingdom. But, yeah, no, it was... otherwise, it was a great meeting. Oh, they did have Jamie Kilstein there, who's an American comic.
Okay.
And he was very good. Yeah, it was a great meeting. Lots of people there. Good attendance. They had to turn people away. They... didn't book quite enough space because they were advancing cautiously, and there was a huge surge of people who wanted to go to this thing. But otherwise, yeah, it was a great meeting. Some of the things that most surprised me about it, that most impressed me actually, was that women were very well represented there. They had a panel session with just women, and there were many female speakers in attendance. And the other thing was, atheists don't take themselves quite so seriously. Every evening it was just a solid comic show, so it was hilarious. some of the news organizations took that as a sign that we weren't serious, but I think it's more like, you know, when you're dealing with a religion, you got to learn to laugh.
I agree, because I don't know, when you're confronting these weird sort of absurd ideas, it's just, I mean, it's built-in comedy. I mean, it is for me. I mean, I've been listening to a lot to nonprofits, you know, those Jeff D. and Matt Dillahunty and LeBeau and Russell and those guys, that gang. And, you know, it's just in the general conversation, it's just such great fertile ground for humor.
Oh, yeah.
You can't help it.
I mean, your choices are you either get outraged and you explode, or you break down laughing at these silly antics that they're going through. And usually it's better for your health to start laughing.
Right. And you have a special talent for getting yourself into sort of humorous, ironic situations as well.
Who, me?
Yes. you gotta step in it now and then on purpose, and then.
Oh yeah. Whenever you deal with religion, I mean, you know, if you confront it, that's what you discover is the absurdities that they believe in, and so it prompts all kinds of humor. There was one news article in Australia that described the conference, and they talked about me, and they said I was hilarious, but you know, it was a strange thing because I was actually pretty serious. It's just my source material is so good Yeah, it breaks everybody up into laughter when you start talking about crackers and things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you listen to, I mean, one of my favorite new atheists, I would say, presentations was Richard Dawkins at, what was it, Lynchburg, right up where all the Liberty University students showed up. And, man, it really played like a Carlin act. Yeah. I was just rolling on that. I've played that a couple times here. It's just one of my favorite speeches.
Oh, yeah, again, it's a source material. When you have these people coming up and trying to seriously tell you that the Earth is 6,000 years old, and we have evidence, for instance, that dogs are domesticated 9,000 years before that, how can you take them seriously?
Right, right.
Yeah, the dogs beat them.
Well, I have a ferret, and they're domesticated even before then.
Oh, yeah. Were they? Is there good evidence for that?
Yeah, they're on Egyptian hieroglyphic carvings. But that wouldn't be 9,000.
That wouldn't be 9,000.
That would be 5,000. Yeah.
Yeah. The evidence for domestication of dogs is paleontological and genetic.
Yeah, they're gang creatures, so could see that happening. You know. I noticed there were a lot of entertainers on the bill, so I guess you brought that up. But also, there seems to be a strained version of Julia Sweeney, Catherine Devaney. Did you catch her?
Oh, yes. She was very good.
Tell us about it.
Well, she's a little different than Julia Sweeney. You know, Julia Sweeney gives a fairly gentle approach, a humorous approach to religion. Catherine Devaney comes out there, guns blazing, and just rips into them. So she's a bit more aggressive than Julia Sweeney. But, of course, I like that, so it was fun.
But, excuse me, her act kind of surrounds around trying a lot of different religions, right?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a Julia Sweeney sort of... I was having a conversation with my mother tonight, and I did not realize that she had been 10 different religions in her lifetime.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Has she given up on it yet?
No, not really, but she really laughs hard at all my jokes, which are very cruel. So, you know, there's kind of a... I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Well, I think there's a good... solid strain in the United States of people who do not take organized religion seriously, who still claim to be believers in a generic sort of deity. You know, they're willing to acknowledge that maybe there's something greater than themselves out there. But you know that old rugged individualist stereotype of the American, they don't fit comfortably in a church. And I know my father was this way, where he was definitely not religious. He felt spiritual about some things, but he laughed himself sick at what religion went through.
My mom is living in an assisted living place with all Catholics, and they were asking her to pray for some of these people in the seminary there to become priests. And so they were asking people to sponsor them with prayer, which is, this is new to me. I hadn't heard that. They usually want money, you know. And she did pray for one of the guys, and she prayed for him to basically find his bliss and do what he'd be best at. And it worked. He quit.
Okay.
So there is a God.
Or there is common sense.
Whatever.
But man, living in a retirement home with a bunch of Catholics, that's kind of my personal nightmare, I think.
Well, if they knew who you were, for sure.
And you know me, I wouldn't shut my mouth, so they would know who I was pretty quickly.
But she grew up in an evangelical, her people are like from Springfield, and we're from St. Louis in the Midwest. The Catholics aren't real harsh, compared to that. Those people out of Springfield are pretty. Rough, you know.
Yeah, things like Assembly of God and so forth.
Yeah,
the fervent evangelical fundamentalist types are scary.
They really bang the table on that hellfire stuff. The Catholics just say you're going to hell if you're not in the club, but the evangelicals, they want to tell you every reason why you're going to hell.
Yeah, and the Catholics tend to be kind of smug about it and say, well, we're going to heaven, you're going to hell. Too bad. Well,
right.
The evangelical types are They want to do you the favor of dragging you up to heaven with them.
Yeah, but at least the evangelicals, they always give you that, you know, that out, you know, just, you know, if you just accept Jesus, you can raise hell all your life, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That nice little loophole there.
Yes, faith matters, not works.
Well, you spoke in Springfield. Now, Springfield, Springfield, Missouri, if mm-hmm. Folks don't know about that, is the first evangelical seminary was started there. Also, the first religious radio station was in Springfield. It's a very, very evangelical atmosphere mm-hmm. there.
And conservative.
Very conservative. And also famous for truck stops. So you spoke there. What was that experience like?
Oh, again, it was very different from what people expect. What was held there was a conference called Skepticon, which is being repeated again this year in November, and I urge everyone to go because it was one of the most entertaining conventions I've ever been to. But yeah, it's a generic skepticism conference. We have lots of different people talking about, you know, how to approach the world and how to think critically about everything. And there's always a good strain of anti-religious discussion going on because, well, you know, if you're skeptical, you can't believe in religion. So yeah, it was a good conference with a small group of people like Vic Stenger, Rebecca Watson, Richard Carrier, some of whom will be reappearing next year. And it was just a ball. Also, they have great parties there.
And that right. Baptists tend to do that because, you know, it's all...
Oh, yeah, it's kind of a reaction
right.
in the lifestyle. Once you get out of there, you've got to cut loose, and so they do.
And it was standing room only, as I remember. And and it wasn't very... Was it protested much? Was it?
No. Well, there was some. I mean, there was some stuff in the newspaper and so forth. I think they were just kind of shocked that we dared to stand up and that, you know, it's like here we are in the depths of Mordor and we're just jumping up and having a good time and partying down, and I don't think they knew quite how to react to it.
I hope you weren't dancing.
Well, personally, I don't dance.
Oh, okay.
We just went drinking instead. Not long.
And so the difference between a skeptic conference, Skepticon, and an atheist convention would be
the atheist convention is narrower in scope, but the general principles are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that what you'll find at a skeptic conference is that they'll also address things like spiritualism and ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot.
Right.
And, you know, this whole wider range of lunacy that we find in the American landscape. An atheist conference would just concentrate on religion.
Right. So at an atheist conference, you're more likely to run into some overlap drivel from, like, New Age. And
yes.
Right. But see, I've learned from reading your blog and other places that there are a lot of atheist communities that are just dripping in homeopathy and, you know, craziness and ghosts, and actually all of England would almost be.
what it is that there's this kind of New Age thought that you find in places like the Huffington Post, where unfortunately liberals go, and they've substituted, you know, a proper respect for science and critical thinking with this kind of blind obeisance to absurdity. I mean, that's where you find all this stuff about homeopathy and life after death, and makes me kind of ashamed to be a liberal.
My Tibetan grandmaster told me to be skeptical about everything. And
uh-huh. And you were skeptical of him, right?
No, of course not.
Oh,
no, he told me to be skeptical.
I see, then you can trust him.
That's the way of the master.
Uh-huh.
So I hear a lot of that. You're right with liberals, but I mean, if you can, if you get in among, you know, regular liberals and announce loudly that you're atheist, you will be, you know, kicked in the butt just as hard as if you're a crazy evangelical. I know.
Noticed. And oftentimes it will be because you're rocking the boat.
That's right.
Yeah, that you know they want to mainstream liberalism. They want to win over the great unwashed middle Americans who are so unthinking about religion, and so having us vocal atheists around kind of annoys them. But I really think there are a lot of our kind, even in places like the Bible Belt. You know, Texas. I get so much email from people in Texas who have stories to tell, but they're just as atheist as I am.
Living in Texas will make you an atheist. I mean, you could just be a regular old simple non-believer, such as myself. Come down here, and you decide you're an atheist.
Oh yeah,
there's kind of a difference, you know. It's like the yapping of your jaws increases, you know.
Right. So it's like we atheists often tell people that the best way to become an atheist is to read the Bible.
Absolutely.
And probably a good way to be a good fervent liberal is to move to Texas.
Yeah, that reminds me of my discussion with my mom tonight. Was like, you know, she considers herself a Christian, but she hates the Bible. Which is, you know, bizarre. But it really was an attempt to bring me into that evangelical Christian background that made me an atheist, because I was just recovering from the fact that I'd been duped by the Santa Claus thing.
Oh.
Which I recognized, well, I was beginning, even when I was still a Santa Claus believer, I was beginning to recognize that I was being manipulated by this to, you know, try and evoke better behavior.
Yes.
And so I got a little ticked off when I realized I'd been duped, you know, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then right as this, in a 1 year overlap, now they're trying to tell me that about Noah's Ark and the Tower of Babel. And I'm going, wait a minute. And with the same concept of trying to change my behavior or go to hell, I'm going, wait a minute. This is, well, I'm not buying this again, you know. So it really was the Santa Claus myth that kind of threw me off religion, because I saw it as being, you know, the same thing. I was about eight or nine.
Yeah. Yeah, Santa Claus also illustrates another thing is you know, I didn't believe it for a long time, but I continued to pretend I would believe it.
Interesting.
Simply because there was so much incentive to do so, that it was such a positive thing to get presents on Christmas. And, you know, your parents expected you to worship Santa Claus, or whatever it is you do with Santa Claus.
So you fear Santa Claus.
Yeah. So you keep up that belief, even when you don't believe it deep down. And I think Jesus is the same way, that there's a lot of people who don't really believe, but they're kind of afraid to admit it because, well, you know, they feel like, well, I'll give up an afterlife if I do that.
Right. I do remember my childhood, you know, when I was still in the Santa Claus and being indoctrinated into Christianity, the Baptist form, which is real strong on hell. I remember terror. It was terror because I was kind of a misbehaving kid. So I was in constant terror, and I was always trying to figure out, you know, okay, if I get caught, is it a sin? And, you know, I was trying to figure out all the legal loopholes, and I just remember being very afraid, and it was real. A weight off my young shoulders to realize, oh man, this is BS. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
somehow I'm not surprised you were a naughty child, though. Yeah, my religious upbringing was a little different, though. I was brought up in the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and they're not so much on hell at all. It's all positive, feel good stuff, with very little theology presented in the church itself. It's more of a coffee clutch sort of environment, and so it was easy for me to leave that. I just found it irrelevant and uninteresting.
Well, Peter Singer was there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comments on that?
Unfortunately, I missed his talk.
Oh, okay.
I was recovering from jet lag, and I actually slept through it. I kicked myself afterwards. They scheduled him for the early morning, which was really harsh on us Americans.
Right.
But from what I heard, it was good. He's a philosopher who's fairly controversial because he promotes a rational approach to morality. And he argues, for instance, that there are such things as human beings you don't have to treat in a special way. If you're born anencephalic, there's nothing spiritual, reverential, or special about that piece of meat. On the other hand, he talks about many animals who are sentient, and you know, we should be conscious of the pain we deal to them. That's probably an idea that doesn't go over very well in Texas. But he's very much against, you know, carnivory and things like that.
But he seems to be sort of a humanist objectivist in a sense. Like, he's looking for absolutes. Or, I mean, did you get that impression of his philosophy? He's kind of looking for absolute truths, and he's not...
Well, not so much absolute truth as sort of a all-consuming empathy, that we should regard other creatures on the planet with us as conscious beings who deserve a little more respect than we give them.
Peter Singer, for most of you folks, he's sort of the his idea sort of what founded PETA. I don't know if he was ever a chairman of it or anything, but
oh well, PETA's insane.
Well,
PETA likes many of his ideas, and I don't think he's exactly a founding member of the organization.
Okay,
I wouldn't go quite so far, but. No, I would agree that Peter Singer would say things like, you simply shouldn't do any kind of experimentation on monkeys.
Right. Right.
They're too conscious, they're too intelligent, they're too aware of what's going on around them. And if we're going to make the argument from empathy that we shouldn't cause harm to our fellow human beings because, you know, do unto others as we would have them do unto you, we ought to recognize that many other species share similar properties and we shouldn't do unto them as we would rather they didn't do to us.
Cousins, especially your cousins.
Yeah.
Right. So another thing, I see somebody is trying to rebrand atheism again. Affirmative atheists, that came up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. A double threat to affirmative theists.
Well, you know, I don't see it quite so much as rebranding, because we're still atheists. But, you know, we've got all these terms flying around that the atheists despise. I mean, new atheist is just awful. We're not new. And then there's all these other adjectives they throw at us, you know, like they could have qualified as rabid atheists or shrill atheists or militant atheists. And they're all very misleading. And I kind of thought, if we're going to stick an adjective in front of atheist, affirmative is a fairly good one. You know, it doesn't have negative connotations. It doesn't waffle. It doesn't try to hide us. It doesn't make us superior to others like Brights does.
Right.
So it's just a reasonable modifier. Of course, the best modifier I got was from a young woman who came up and said I was a hard atheist. Which
oh, I like it.
I said, yes, that's me.
Right. Ever since I got my blood pressure medication. So how's the book going?
I'm struggling with a book right now. You interrupted me.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm going to be late for my deadline. I just know it. But I'm making fairly good progress right now and plowing through it.
And when do you have to go back to work?
In the fall.
In the fall. Okay.
Yes.
So you got some time. You got some time.
Well, some. But I've got to finish it soon because they're talking about trying to get it out for a summer release. My publisher somehow thinks that this book will not make a good book for a Christmas release.
Oh, I totally disagree. I mean, the irony of giving somebody any of these great atheist books for Christmas is over.
Oh, yeah,
you know, it's too easy.
Well, you know, if it comes out in the summer, you can still give it for a Christmas present.
Okay, we have been talking to PZ Myers. If you'd like to join him on Feringula Blog, I'm not going to try and spell that. Just Google PZ. That's it.
It works.
Hit the first link, and there you go. And I'd go over there and check out some of the arguments. And I think you'll find it entertaining, enjoyable, and, you know, it's great. It's a great combination. It's the magic combination. So
intellectually stimulating.
Thank you. Thank you, PZ.
Yep.
We'll catch you again. Bye-bye.
Okay.
This has been the Innerside Radio Program, a leisure service of the Pacifica Foundation. This and all other Innerside Radio programs can be found by Googling The Innerside. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.